Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tell you what, boys, if only people knew what we spoke about before this podcast.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are here once again in the rugby dungeon to talk about the autumn internationals and the big one. The world champions, New Zealand, against the world-ranked number two side, Ireland, in the biggest showdown in rugby since the last World Cup. And it was everything we hoped it would be. That and all the other international matches are going to go under the microscope today. With me, Tim, with him, JB.
Hello, Timothy.
And with Phil.
Hello, Tim.
We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're currently broadcasting on YouTube, so get on there. We are Facebook, everywhere else, wherever you are, we are. And we thank you very, very much for listening.
Including next week when we'll be at Marseille, Rome and Monaco with a short stop in Nice.
We will. We are going to take some pod equipment, aren't we? Because we're going to expect, last year, JB and I went and we just had, at the World Rugby Awards, we just had this procession of legends brought our way.
And we had to limit our time with them because, like, Tim, JB, we listen to your pod all the time. So it was like literally 5 minutes with Richie, 5 minutes with Bowden, 5 minutes with Rico.
Eddie.
I wonder how that would go down this year. A lot of water has gone underneath the Eddie Bridge since we met him last time.
Do you think he's been listening to you?
Well, let's put it this way. When we saw him last time, he just won Coach of the Year. Yes. How long ago does that seem?
That was 1 year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to get into all of the rugby. How much of it did you manage to watch? Because a lot of these games were overlapping.
I didn't see Wales. I saw everything else, pretty much.
I saw the first half of Wales, or the first half an hour of Wales. I've seen the highlights of that since. I watched the Friday night game, I watched the Sunday game, and pretty much everything in between, including actually now extended highlights of Italy-Australia.
Ooh, well. I haven't seen that either.
So, yeah, gone pretty
deep.
But
even the score, I mean, I'm sure Australia won, but what was the score?
Australia did win 26.
21-7, something like that?
Yeah, 26-7 or 26-10.
We will have another podcast coming your way on the... which is a Premiership focus one, but obviously, as you can understand, we are focusing totally on the international rugby, and there's only one place to start, the Aviva Stadium in Dublin, Saturday evening. Now, having said this last week, when we were talking about, in the context of some of the laws and the interpretations and how complicated it can be, I can say from the anecdotally, with the people I was with earlier today, not rugby supporters, mainly football fans, Manchester United fans, but
footy, who are you with?
Footy, but they all watched Ireland v New Zealand last night and were raving about the game of rugby, broadly speaking.
Yeah,
and how they will watch more. So this whole window is a massive shop window for the game in general, with the World Cup a year away. So how brilliant that on a terrestrial channel, prime time, we had that.
I'll tell you what, Channel 4. Could not be more delighted that they happened to pick up that game.
Yeah.
I mean, the rugby gods are smiling down at Channel 4's executives now.
They really are. Even though, so like, a lot of kind of neutrals might look at the score and say, 16-9, perhaps not a great game. But what? Nothing could be further from the truth.
Here
it
you
was
are.
Sensational.
I'm going to say it. Actually, before I say it, I want to just caveat this. I want to say that in the NFL... when people want to say something profound, they don't say the NFL, they say this National Football League or the National Football League, right? I want to say this. It was the greatest game of rugby union football I have ever seen. That's how good it was.
Really?
Yeah, it was.
Wait,
that
are we talking
good.
In those?
It was.
I mean, it was amazing.
Now, is it as entertaining as, say, Fiji in full flight against Wales when they knocked out Wales? Something like that, because that's an amazing game in terms of, you know, just the sheer spectacle of it. But actually, the standard of rugby being played yesterday was the highest level of rugby ever played, I would say.
So I think I agree with you when you caveat it in terms of the standard of rugby.
Yeah.
And I thought the standard of both teams was truly exceptional. I think I said it to you during the game. I think the standard of New Zealand's attack is marginally better than Ireland's attack. Mm. But I think Ireland's defence is better than any defence we've ever seen.
Ever. Ever.
Ever. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is remarkable what they did. I mean, line speed, we all knew line speed was important. It's been mentioned before. But work rate, who knew it?
Line speed, work rate. The line speed wasn't that aggressive. They do play a different system to, like, a blitz defence.
Yeah.
But it was the solidity of the defensive line, the kind of communication and the cohesiveness and the understanding of everyone not to create any dog legs. The understanding of when to dive in and go for a turnover, go for a jackal, but not to do it all the time. And topping everything off. And probably the most important thing out of all of it was how few penalties they gave away.
Yeah.
And it's that decision-making that kind of solidified that. And they completely nullified it is definitely the most potent attack in the world.
Yeah, 100%.
It's one of the most potent attacks we've ever seen again. And they just completely nullified it.
Yeah. The thing you said, Phil, is the communication. Because they were completely comfortable. They never looked rushed. They never looked hurried. They looked like they were working hard. But it was a very mature performance by a team, which is exactly that. They've matured together.
100%. And one man whose stock has risen beyond belief. The last time New Zealand were held tryless.
Oh,
remember what that was?
Yes. Yeah. 2017 Lions.
It was. And in terms of Northern Hemisphere sides, those are the only two times since the 1995 World Cup when New Zealand have been held tryless. And both times, Andy Farrell has been marshalling that defence.
It's quite something, isn't it? It's quite something.
Farrell should take a huge amount of credit. Schmidt.
I love it. I'm sure some Irish fans would be going, "Oh, look at the English podcast trying to get an Englishman leg into it."
It's. I think a performance like that is impossible just to pin it on one person.
Agreed.
It was a full. It was a full 23 man effort. In terms of Farrell, you know, one of the things I thought last night when a few people were flagging up the Farrell structures that created that or helped to create that defence, I thought, just how bad must Stuart Lancaster have been?
Yeah, it does. All roads do lead back to Burgess and Lancaster.
If Farrell is that good, which he evidently is, because, I mean, he's done it previously at Saracens, he's done it with the Lions, he's done it with Ireland. If he's that good, and England have unquestionably got a load of talented players as well, just what screwed it all up?
Well, where's Mike Catt now?
Because well, good question.
Maybe Italy, isn't he?
He is in Italy.
Maybe we need to do some more digging around there.
Yeah, this performance by Ireland, I don't mean this in any way critically. It wasn't. What's the right word? It wasn't exceptional. Well, no, it was exceptional, but it wasn't. I can't think of the right word. My point being, it was the epitome of a team. They didn't. They don't make loads of clean breaks. They don't. They don't have huge flair attacking moves. They just apply so much pressure by doing everything basically, all the basics brilliantly and relentlessly.
Yeah, I guess what you're referring to was not a lack of attacking flair, because I guess the Stockdale try was, you know, that was brilliant individual effort.
Brilliant team play to set it up, to give him that opportunity to do that.
Mm.
And what he did was incredible.
The second best young winger in Ireland.
The word I was thinking, they're not spectacular.
Oh, I don't know. But, I mean, so
they're,
they're not a spectacular offensive. Apart, they
scored, not, that's
they
not a criticism. It's actually
But the game doesn't. That game, the magnitude of that game, doesn't lend itself to spectacular rugby. You've got to go
but
out
I
there.
I think it is spectacular.
But the extension to that,
it depends on your definition of spectacular.
The extension to my point is the one other team in my lifetime that wasn't spectacular but was incredibly talented and effective was the England 03 World Cup winning side.
Mm. So, yeah, I mean,
they were relentless. I mean, they had Jason Robinson with a couple of magical moments, but actually the bulk of it was relentless
kick
pressure.
Kick chase, tackle,
horrible
kick chase.
Pack.
Yeah, amazing set piece.
Yeah,
amazing.
Bigger,
drills.
Harder. It's all about perspective because I see those sort of performances as spectacular. Mm. I mean, I have no time for tries and that sort of stuff. And I tell you what, when Ireland looked like they were about to win, I asked Phil who scored the try for New Zealand because it didn't feel like New Zealand were tryless.
Yeah,
it was quite something. Now, here is what I'd worry about. Have Ireland won their World Cup a year too soon?
Interesting. I don't think so. I think the way that team is set up, they are just improving. They're going from strength to strength. And they've got such a well-balanced team in terms of guys like Stockdale, like James Ryan, like Lama, who was on the bench.
Like Kieran Marmion, by the way.
Marmion.
And McGrath.
Young lad. Yeah. Ringrose, young lad. I mean, Ty Furlong, not an old head. So they've got those young lads who will only, in 12 months' time...
Josh Van Der Fleer.
Yeah. Dan Levy.
Yeah. Who didn't Robbie Henshaw. Connor Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, guys who will only be better in
will
12
Addison.
Months.
Will
Addison. Well done, Jay.
So I'm not too worried about it. Now, if that game was a quarterfinal or semi-final, or even a final against New Zealand...
Well, it's either going to be a quarterfinal or a final.
Okay.
They're the options.
Okay.
Well, but if someone pointed out to me that on Twitter that if New Zealand lose to South Africa, actually, could it not be the second round,
which is the quarterfinal?
So, their pools, if both New Zealand and Ireland finish top of their pools, they will meet in the final if they are still in the competition at that point.
Got you. One finishes first.
If one's first and one's second, they will meet in the quarterfinal.
What a quarterfinal.
But you're going to face South Africa. But you mentioned South Africa, and that's one thing that struck me. The difference between New Zealand's defeat in Wellington, because this is the second time they've been beaten in only a couple of months. The difference between the defeat in Wellington, which was really a freak occurrence.
New Zealand should have won that game.
New Zealand should have won that game comfortably.
But they nearly lost again to South Africa. That's the thing. They were minutes away.
No, I get that. But the one that they did lose in Wellington, New Zealand only made 61 tackles.
That is amazing.
South Africa made 235 tackles. New Zealand only conceded 3 penalties. South Africa conceded 10.
Now,
possession was mostly New Zealand, and South Africa still won it. But this win was
legitimate.
Legit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
There was no. I mean, we spoke last week. Ireland are going to have to take all their chances. No, actually. Yeah. Ireland had to take a chance because as you talked about, their defence is as good as it gets.
Turns out it was New Zealand that needed to take all of the chances.
Yeah, and New Zealand did have a few chances, but
did they drop one? Did I seem to remember them dropping something?
There was an offload. I can't remember when it was.
Squires,
second
maybe.
Half where they offloaded it, and I think it went to Carney when they broke
down
their left wing. And then there was the grubber kick through when Ben Smith is millimetres away, but
Was it Stockers that grabs that one?
No, it was an unbelievable...
No. Oh,
Peter O'Marnie. Oh,
he injured himself in that, didn't he?
It was shortly after that when he won a jackal.
Yeah,
He then, like, collapsed to his...
He won a turnover and then went off.
He couldn't stand up.
He couldn't stand up. There was one moment you realised he couldn't stand up. The final whistle, there's a brilliant shot of the bench. He forgot he was injured. Tried to stand up and then you just saw his face go, ah!
Now, here's a thought I had. Walking the dog this morning when thinking about this Ireland game. How many of those games can you actually play in a career? It can't be many, can it? And I don't mean the standard or the atmosphere. I mean just the physical toll on the body. Because after about, I'd say, 30 minutes, I was like, this must be setting records for effort expended by players in a game.
I wish there was a way of calculating like some way of
combined
some little heartbeats
or something.
Yeah, a heartbeat or like some way of a chip on your body. Yeah, G-force of collisions, and have like a total score for force or
And it kind of comes, it sort of rounds back, doesn't it, to the all the concussion and self and safeguarding stuff, which is like, I'm not entirely sure this sport can be safe because there's 30 men there.
No, of course, it's rugby union. We shouldn't try. It should be safe within the constraints of it's not safe.
It's not safe.
We're mitigating the damage that we can do. We're not eradicating the damage because you're not going to. Peter Romani, heroic. He was.
Which one am I thinking of? Was it like an interception by the scrum half from the line out and then he kind of gets all the way back? I thought what a scrum half that manages to intercept something.
I'm pretty sure you're thinking Peter Romani.
I probably am.
The Grubber kick through for Bowden Barrett for Ben Smith coming
through.
And
Ben Smith's
in the
about
corner.
To grab it and score.
Yeah. Yeah. And Peter Romani, who did so alongside every single player on that Ireland team and also on the New Zealand team, that the New Zealand worked. They were forced to work phenomenally hard. And they did work phenomenally hard. I mean, so Ryan Crotty and James Ryan both topped the tackle counts with 20 each. But there's a whole host of players, like half a dozen plus players, all in double figures on tackles from both sides.
One of them, by the way, Luke McGrath, on for 20 minutes, was the sixth highest tackler.
Amazing.
10 tackles. He just came on, the scrum half, and just put himself about big time.
You've got to, haven't you? You've got to.
Yeah, that's great.
So tell me this, Tim. Have you ever been part of a team who's pretty much won everything in a season?
We got the Berkshire Sporting Newbury Weekly News Team of the Season when I was under eights because we won everything because we went unbeaten the whole season.
So nice. Where I'm coming,
it's comparable with Ireland this year, I think.
Pretty comparable, yeah. The Newbury under eights, but have I ever been in a team that's won pretty much everything? No.
So I was thinking about the New Zealand loss, okay? Because I've been in teams which have been pretty good, pretty dominant throughout the season. You think you're good, you're on like a 10-game winning streak, and then to lose, and how awful it feels. And losing doesn't feel that bad always, but if you think you're really good, and that's sort of like how your identity is, and then you lose, that must be absolutely...
Well, in that Newbury under-8s mini rugby season where we went unbeaten the whole year, in fact, it wasn't unbeaten. There was one game we lost, and it was in the final of a tournament, and we lost to Worthing extra time, and all of the team were all in floods of tears. That's the only time we'd lost all season. Didn't know how to cope with it.
So it is actually very analogous to how
exactly. So Kieran, give me a call.
Yeah. Well, there is chat in the papers and film. Had mentioned this yesterday. Kieran Reid might be one of the guys that New Zealand might have to look to move on.
It's interesting. So I was chatting to a guy I work with who's from Christchurch, big Saders fan, and he was saying that Kieran Reid might be the guy who he's getting a bit over the hill. He's had problems with injuries. Mm. He's not as athletic and dynamic as he once was. Remember a few, kind of four years ago. But best player on earth in the doing the hard yards, but also one of the best players on
wide channels
in the 13 channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
He's not quite there, but so I think they will keep him around because of his leadership, because of his decision making.
He's captain, isn't he?
He is captain. He made 17 tackles, missed none yesterday. He's a line-out option because he is 6'4". So I don't think he will, but he's just a different player. And back to the point we always make about back rows, you've got to have the balance of the back row. So it means maybe you've got to play someone who's a bit more of a heavy traffic ball carrier at 6, like a Squiresy, and you need someone a bit more explosive like an Ardie Surveyor at 7.
Yeah.
A few observations before we get into any more technicalities. While it's on my head, firstly, you mentioned New Zealand. The haircuts of New Zealand players talk about analogous them and Exeter Chiefs. What is it about New Zealand? Is it both quite rural?
Yeah.
Sparsely populated. Probably takes a while for fashions to catch up to the current day.
There is a direct correlation between bad haircuts and poor internet connection because they simply can't keep up, can they?
Yeah, Ted Hill spent all that time in the Worcester Academy house. He looked sharp.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So there's that. Also, the Ireland kit It's got the weird detail down the side. Almost looks like water bubbles. It looked like if Aquaman... Well, Aquaman's pants are made of the same material as Ireland's shirt.
Now, I'm only familiar with Aquaman via the medium of Entourage.
So yeah, me too.
I don't know.
It's now a movie as well.
Is it?
Aquaman from Entourage. Oh, what's his name? Ari Gold. Yeah. What a legend. Why can't he be... Oh, man. Yeah, need more Ari Gold in our life. Yeah. And also, you mentioned Stockers. He is now... Oh, what Stockers. Was it? Stockers is... What was the stat?
Nearly as good as Jordan Lomber.
He is. He's had 14 Ireland caps. He is currently the 15th highest try scorer for Ireland in history.
Wow. Good effort.
So good.
That is a great effort.
The most amazing, I can't remember who mentioned this on Twitter, so I can't give credit, but someone pointed out that a couple of minutes before the try, he tried a chip over the top and it was charged down by, it was either Retallick or Whitelock. That almost led to a try in the opposite direction.
Yes.
So fair play for him for
sticking at it.
Yeah, correct, recognizing that, correcting it, trying it again. Because a lot of players were just, oh, I'm not going to try this, I'm just going to carry it in. Tried it, executed it, and what a try.
And on that try, someone else, nondescript person on Twitter that I can't credit, but I remember reading it, and then I've since watched a little video clip of it. That move that led to that, so from the line out, off the top, to midfield, looks like they go in right, and Bundyaki comes back, jars to the left, and it's back to the left winger. Exactly the same move was used, and almost successfully, but not successfully, against Romania in the last World Cup. So that's a move. That's not even a Joe Schmidt move. That's been in Ireland.
An Ireland move.
That's been in Ireland's playbook before a lot of these players were even playing for the side.
But the key there was actually the chip. Because I remember running moves like that when I was playing, and you were hoping that all the forwards, all the pack will overchase. You're kind of hoping that every single one of the pack is like Michael Hooper and like really athletic. But it never happens. You end up with a few of the heavier guys staying put. And so you end up with a winger running kind of 3-on-1 against 3 tight 5 forwards. So it never worked. But what they did, what Ireland have clearly recognised, is that it doesn't really matter as long as the fullback overchases, because that way, that's where the space is in behind.
It was Ben Smith actually that overchased. Ben Smith was dropped back for the kick option.
So he's kind of playing the fullback.
And he gassed up to the line and created all the space for Stockdale to exploit. He didn't need to chase it as hard as he did. He could have left it. So, but yeah, brilliant. Amazing execution. So,
yeah, and just one last thing on this game. Where is Brodie Retallick in the list of the world's greatest locks?
I think it's very difficult to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
So I think there's probably half a dozen locks who are all vying for that number one spot, and on any given performance anyone could look at.
Well, you mean currently? Like,
currently
playing the game. Oh, he's number one.
Do you reckon? So,
yeah.
Again, more dog walking thoughts.
I thought you
me.
Meant of all time.
No. Currently playing. I don't think there is a greatest lock in the world at the moment. Because if you think about it, like, he is amazing. But he's probably not as physical as Etzebeth. Or he's, you know, there's people... He might be the best all-rounder, but he's not maybe the best. I think there might be a group of, like, 3 or 4 lads who are joint the best, depending on the situation. But he's absolutely phenomenal either way.
Yeah, he is. I think there are multiple... He, maybe because of what he's done and his CV, is probably the best.
Mm.
But is he that much better? Well, is he better in the tight than Etzebeth? Is he more athletic all round than someone like Itoje?
Yeah.
Is he a better destructive defender than Laws?
Where's he ranked next to Alan Wynne-Jones? Something like that.
And the two guys, like, how good, so both James Ryan and Toner.
Toner was immense.
Toner's been on the bench for the last year, comes back in and does that.
Toner was incredible.
And there was one hit that those two put in on Retallick, speaking of Retallick, where first Toner wrapped him up and then James Ryan just smashes him and they carry him back 4 or 5 metres.
Mm.
Just amazing, amazing. Well,
yeah, one of those rare games where you have total and utter respect for everyone that played for it.
I forgot a couple of things. Did you see at the start of the Channel 4 programme the Irish players lip syncing?
No.
So I did. I rewatched.
It was hilarious.
I rewatched the game today while I was cooking. And I did see that.
They weren't doing it with a lot of enthusiasm, were they?
Well, I can only imagine Channel 4, some Channel 4 kind of
producer,
runner or someone has said, can you lip sync this? Can you sing this? And they've just all said, no, absolutely not.
And then
I'll read it.
Yeah, you're contractually obliged to do what we ask.
Hang on,
because they overwhelmingly used Rory Best, so he was the one that obviously got the most enthusiastic about it.
What on earth are we talking about?
They were lip syncing along to a song.
I don't know what song it was.
I don't know what song it was, but at the start of to open up, the first thing you saw before you had any presenter or anything, it was a little video VT bit of the Island players lip syncing to a song.
Why?
I don't know. Don't question
why not?
Channel 4.
Channel 4
rugby. If they've showed us that game, let's never question it ever again.
Fine.
And also, one of my favourite bits about it, the noise, the cacophony of noise. I can't imagine what it must have been like being in that Aviva Stadium when that try was scored.
And the end.
What was amazing was the contrast between the noise of that try and then you could hear a pin drop for the conversion.
Yeah.
I love it. I really love it.
Yeah, it's a proper rugby venue, the Aviva.
And one other person I think deserves a lot of credit. I just sort of touched on him there, Rory Best. I don't think that guy gets the credit he deserves. That's two times he's captained the Ireland side to a Grand Slam and then followed it up with beating New Zealand. He's done it twice now.
I thought you were going to say Wayne Barnes.
I was going to say Wayne Barnes. That is what I'm going to say. Wayne Barnes.
Yes.
Wayne Barnes deserves a lot of credit.
He let a lot of stuff go, though, didn't he?
He did let a lot of stuff go. The one... So there was the challenge, the Carney challenge on... was it McKenzie?
Yeah, it was D-Mac, yeah.
There was that.
Yeah, and that's one of the consequences of all the stuff that's been around in the laws and all the newspaper columns and all the podcasts like ours talking about laws for the last however long and the last couple of years and all these controversial things and all this concussion stuff and people like Alison Pollock means, unfortunately... The Irish crowd were amazing. They were baying for blood on a couple of occasions.
Are we going back? Are we going to go after the Irish?
There was a seatbelt tackle on by Liam Squire, right? Just a regulation seatbelt tackle. Didn't hit the head. It was a bit high. Penalty only. They were booing when it was a penalty only. Like, oh, I can't believe he gave a yellow card. And then, funnily enough, dead silent when Rob Carney tackled. Tackle D-Mac in the air. If that was the other way around...
But they're allowed to be partisan.
No. It's fine, but if that was the other way around, we would never have heard the end. If the scores had been reversed...
That's their job.
We would never have heard the end of... Yeah. I can't believe that was only... If the Rob Carney D-Mac thing had been the other way around.
Creating a hostile atmosphere.
Yeah, good for them.
Entertaining.
But the way New Zealand have taken the defeat... Their fans and stuff online, it's been brilliant. They've been great.
Don't know.
And the players and the coaches, they've been so New Zealand never amazes me how classy they are. Sweeping up dressing rooms or whether they're losing with dignity. They're so humble.
My all time favourite classy New Zealand moment was Kieran Reid about to win the Lions test. turns on Sam Warburton and goes, hey mate, that's just rugby, eh? And then the ref turns around and goes, actually, it's off. What did he say? It's a scrum. And then all of a sudden, he goes, what? What?
sir, no, sir.
What? This isn't it. No, what? Yeah.
I've got. They are humble and classy and actually.
They're not humble.
Hear me out on this because they're exactly humble and classy and dignified and. In the way that Exeter Chiefs are, and maybe there is an inverse relationship between humility and haircuts.
And
maybe it is a graph. As haircuts get worse, humility gets higher. And maybe that's because when you look in the mirror at that monstrosity every day...
See, I would love to think that you were right there, but I can't. I imagine the haircuts actually come from a place where literally you've not been criticised for so long and nobody criticises you. Even when you show up with these stupid haircuts like Brody Retallick does. because he's not been told anything different for so long now, he just thinks he can cut his hair however he wants.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I will defend the Irish on Twitter a little bit. There were some.
There is not one homogenous group called the Irish on Twitter. This is ludicrous.
Tim's attacking them.
I'm not attacking them at all.
It certainly came across that way.
One generic Irish group.
No, I'm saying it's Wayne Barnes did a brilliant job. He made some calls that had it been reversed, we would never have heard the end of it.
Yeah, okay.
That's the point I made. And I'd say that's a fairly factual statement based on the evidence of decisions in the past.
But then you went on to say how amazingly humble and respectful. Yeah, well,
because New Zealand fans haven't been bleating about New Zealand fans haven't been bleating about refereeing decisions.
The homogenous group of New Zealanders.
So the implication there is that the Irish fans have been bleating
in the past when they miss out on losses. Do you not remember the week after Chicago?
No,
when Ireland just lost to New Zealand.
I do. I remember.
Oh my God, Twitter was ridiculous. Anyway. That's my standard weekly Twitter rant. No, but you're talking about Ireland. Some of their journalists are funny, and this is one. What was the guy's name?
Oh no, you've got to talk about Rob Kitson this week.
This guy. What's his name? It's not George Horn. Anyway, I'll get the name. George Hook wrote in May the 30th, 2016, when Joe Schmidt had been appointed as the Ireland head coach and led Leinster to defeat against Connacht in the Pro 12 final. George Horn wrote. Is that right?
George Hook wrote.
Schmidt may well be the worst coach in Irish rugby history.
Wow.
Yesterday exposed the paucity of his thinking, the authoritarian approach by the national coach. I can't read my own writing, has led to the demise of leadership. Ireland travel to South Africa in 2 weeks for a 3-test series. One wonders what the Irish rugby public expect. I do not know what they want, but I know what they will get.
Wow.
I wonder what he's going to be saying today.
Well, that's why not everyone who comments on rugby has their own hashtag, Downfall 2018. So, look, we can all make outrageous predictions, but not all of us can be correct. Sorry about that, George.
George Hook is the...
He got fired.
He's the Irish equivalent of Stephen Jones, isn't he?
I'm not sure. I know he got fired. I think
he's not
radio.
Neil Francis these days.
Maybe they're both vying for that coveted position.
Yeah, they're in a running gun battle with Stephen Jones for the worst rugby writer on earth.
Most belligerent rugby writer on earth.
Yes.
He's actually a very good writer.
Reluctantly, he is.
Just one thing on the referee. The one decision that I think that Wayne Barnes did get wrong was the Whitelock offside lying down intercept.
Oh, yeah.
Where he slapped the ball from the air. So he was offside. He was on the ground, so he shouldn't have played it. And I think there is definitely an argument to say it was a deliberate knock-on.
I agree with all those things.
All three of those. And Wayne Barnes just gave a penalty, which, yeah... Interesting.
It's interesting with all of the everything we've been going through in the European Cup and all the red cards and the cards being chucked around like confetti. There hasn't been a red card in the internationals, and I think that's. And I'm glad of that, and it's upset some fans, and they talk about we want consistency, and I do get that. However, going back to one of the first things I said on this podcast, where this is a shop window for a lot of people, let's not just have games. Cards chucked around. The way it's been refereed in the Autumn Internationals, broadly speaking, is how I want the game refereed across the board.
Yeah,
but you also have players who, they're at the top of their game, they understand the ins and outs of the law, and they're better coming to terms with the way that the law is being officiated now. So I can't think of too many contentious decisions that would have led to a red card, really.
But Khaleesi... Against Scotland.
Red.
It wasn't seen, though.
I saw it on TV. I'm amazed.
I mean, that should be a red.
Yeah.
If anything's going to be a red card, that should be red.
Yeah, it should be a red. And the guy holding him on the floor should get a yellow for cynically holding a player on the floor.
Yep. All right, so why don't we move on to, what in comparison was basically just regional rugby.
Well, everything.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to be the same again, GB.
Nothing's the same. We're in a post-Ireland world now. After Tim tells you about Cornerstone, of course.
Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers for your amazing offer of the best razors we believe you can get. Hey, listen, Christmas around the corner. You might have a dad. I'll tell you what, dad. Take care of dad. Dads are the hardest people to get Christmas presents for.
Yep.
That's true.
That is.
Or your brother. Or your missus who's always nicking your razor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get an engraved aluminium shaft with their initials on it. Six Cornerstone razors in a lovely presentation box wrapped up.
Beautiful.
That'll look perfect under the tree. And do you know what? Because you listen to us, we can make sure you get that for just £4. There's other stuff you can get from cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. However, if you stick with us, £4 for that amazing offer. You'll see why we love it. There's no obligation, but we think you'll want to carry on as well. So sort yourself out first and then sort your loved ones out for Christmas. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or...
Egg 10 at checkout. Just remember, these trips to Monaco do rack up in cost.
They certainly
do.
So
you must go buy some Cornerstone razors.
So does the thousands of quid's worth of kit in the rugby dungeon right now.
Yes.
Very true.
That's true.
So, Johnny Sexton, World Rugby Player of the Year next week?
Faf de Klerk.
Johnny Sexton. Absolutely Johnny Sexton.
Well, we need to give him an Egg Chaser tie because that's what World Player of the Year gets nowadays.
It does. You're going to be... Surprise! Have you how tall he is?
Am
he's
I?
Taller than all of us.
6'2", 6'3".
He's about 6'3". I reckon he's just probably got a centimetre on me and you, JB.
Bloody hell.
Also, right, similar but different question. If you had to pick an international, if you could pick a World 15, who would be your fly half? It's a different question, but kind of the same.
Sexton.
You pick Sexton.
I would.
Would you have Beauden Barrett in your side?
I would definitely on the bench, possibly at 15.
Mm.
Sexton.
Yeah, New Zealand looked better when he was at 15.
Pollard has impressed me this season. Yeah, Sexton.
Now, who would you have?
I think I would go Beauden Barrett.
Would you?
Yeah.
Beauden Barrett did score, was it 5 tries
in
1
Farrell?
Game?
Anyone go for Farrell?
He'd be close.
He would be close. I think Farrell and Sexton are very similar. I would have Sexton over Farrell.
Mm.
Agreed. So
if you were listening to or watching BT Sport on Friday night, you would think that only one man could do that job.
Well, only one man can do that job.
Danny Cipriani.
Danny Cipriani, of course.
Because every single time he touched the ball, even when he wasn't touching the ball, it seemed like there was only one player on the pitch. I know we're talking about Premiership.
We'll talk about that in the Premiership pod. But it was similar too. You would think that the prep sheet for Sky Sports on Saturday, England v Japan, was two things to talk about today: World Cup's in Japan next year.
Yep.
And Japan beat South Africa in the last World Cup. That's all you need to know. But I can understand. Again, going back to that original point, that this is a shop window. Those are important things to convey.
Well, first and foremost, on Japan, they are bloody good at rugby. I mean, like, they're just the basic skills of moving. I mean, they move the ball as well, if not better, than anyone else I've seen all weekend.
Yeah. Oh, their individual skill set.
Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are going to give someone an absolute hiding. And it might not be a tier one team, but whoever's in that group up against them, good God. I mean, they can really play.
So much fun to watch, aren't they?
Yeah. Like, it used to be a case that, you know, the tier twos would be so vastly outclassed by everyone else. Not anymore.
Well, they're ranked 11 in the world at the minute. So, where does tier one extend to?
It's not quite Japan. It's not quite Georgia.
Yeah. It's everyone. So, well, I always think of it as...
It's not quite Italy.
Rugby Championship plus Six Nations.
Yeah.
With then a question mark. A genuine question mark.
You've got nine genuine tier one teams.
Yes.
Yes.
That's where I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Italy are borderline. Georgia and Japan are pushing for it.
Yeah. Particularly Japan. I mean, goodness me.
And they're doing that in the context of £13 a day to live on.
Well, I don't know is the answer.
I think they were staying at the Lensbury. At the England were putting them up in the Lensbury. There you go. Have a few days here.
Who foots the bill for the tour?
I guess this World Rugby probably have money for that.
I'm sure. Don't the host nation foot the bill for the tour?
Don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
But £25,000 for the game match fee versus £13 a day.
But it's always the same narrative every year because England are the best paid team in the world, or at least I think they are. If not, they're up there, right? So the narrative every year is, because they give one game a year to a tier two, the instant focus is, oh, look at these full-time professionals who are the best, or some of the best in the world at their craft. Look what they get compared to these guys. And it sort of always goes back to, come on, England, give them some more money. No, and the answer is no, you can't. So I'm not actually...
Exactly, we want to keep the Brad Shields and the Nathan Hugheses and Dylan Hartley's cup. No, not Dylan Hartley, that's different.
And the Michael Leeches.
Yes. You know, and the Bundyackies.
And the Bundyackies, yeah.
And the Gareth Ainscombes.
Correct. It's the inevitable...
W.P. Nell.
The inevitable yearly chat, isn't it, about how much England get paid and good for them.
Back to the game.
Yes.
Yeah, Japan are legitimately good. England, I think, might have underestimated them a tiny bit.
Which is astonishing, considering Eddie Jones.
Well, what did Eddie Jones say in midweek? Like,
they better go to the temple and pray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why?
I guess they did.
Yeah. Okay. A bit disrespectful. They are very well coached. Is Tony Brown attack coach there?
Don't know.
Well,
Jamie Joseph as head coach.
I've got a feeling Tony Brown is, but don't quote me on that. But they're just, you know, they're so inventive. But obviously, I don't want to talk about Japan because I want to talk about the lack of missed tackles between.
Oh God, here
Ford
we go.
And
the continuation of the issue with Owen Farrell's defence. Go on, what are you saying about this week then? Because Owen Farrell not selected, George Ford selected at 10, Alex Lazowski at 12.
And they made most of their tackles, amazingly. So I assume England must have chosen a different defensive strategy to play Japan, which didn't require a lot of missed tackles.
Which is called not playing New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, it does help not playing New Zealand.
And all the other games that Owen Farrell's played. But anyway, the point was about Owen Farrell. It was last week I mentioned this and the world imploded because...
Yeah, it is interesting, actually. And this, again, we... For anyone that doubts, not that anyone would doubt, for anyone doubts the influence of Egg Chasers, we lead, others follow.
Yeah.
Because in the wake of our podcast, which was there on a Monday morning, there was a whole week's worth of articles... about Owen Farrell's defence, and I didn't really see it get mentioned in the wake of the game.
No, and I will also mention this, which is I've been talking about it for 3 years, or at least two.
3 years?
About two, I'd say, okay? But there is some really good analysis on Owen Farrell as to why he misses tackles. I think you're a fan of this, aren't you, Tim, that it's about the positive outcome.
You've got to take it in context.
There is a context.
Yeah, so it's okay to miss 11 missed tackles if it's all for a positive reason.
Well, no, actually, I don't think it's okay. I don't think it's ever okay to miss 11 tackles, but you have to look at each one in context.
For example, Owen Farrell last week had one missed tackle chalked up because he was running behind Henry Slade to try and make up for the fact...
Who himself is a missed tackle expert.
Well, Henry Slade made one, missed five this game. Just gone. But Henry Slade was... Owen Farrell was working so hard, he ran behind Henry Slade to try and tackle the New Zealand player when he went through and scored. And I can't remember who actually missed the tackle to let him through. Ben Teo had missed the tackle. D-Mac went through. Owen Farrell was working so hard, he managed to get like a fingertip to the shoulder of D-Mac.
Yep.
That went up as a missed tackle. No other player on the field would have even...
Thought of it.
Would have been working so hard that they'd have run behind one of their own players to try and get closer.
Agreed. So we've had Owen Farrell misses tackles because he works harder than everyone else.
True.
But Owen Farrell misses tackles because he's been told to miss tackles. We've had Owen Farrell misses tackles because it ends up in a good result anyway.
It's a system.
It's a system thing. So I've actually come to the conclusion that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe after all this whinging, I am wrong. And therefore, I've decided to use Owen Farrell analysis on my life. So here is a list of bad decisions I've made with positive outcomes. So number one, getting Broughton Park relegated. Bad decision,
yeah.
But positive outcome, moved over to Tok H.
Yep.
Getting enough...
Well, good outcome for Jonathan Beardmore.
Well, that's what...
Yeah, that's all you care about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Rolling my mum's car in a field. Right?
Rolling.
Yeah, rolling. And so,
are you doing donuts or something?
No, a little bit too fast, a little bit icy, flipped into a field, and nose over end, started rolling. Rolling.
Nose over end?
Yep, like that, and then started rolling, rotating down a hill, down a cliff face.
What?
Positive outcome. I hit a tree.
Is that positive?
Because I didn't go down a cliff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Got on a zip wire whilst I was drunk.
You were very drunk. Got on the zip wire?
Yeah, bad decision. Got impaled through my back. Millimetres away from my spine.
Yep.
Good outcome. Not paralysed.
And great story.
Amazing story.
Got into a fight 1 week before my GCSEs. Was suspended for my first exam. Yeah. But positive outcome. Ended up with a C in maths.
And you've got a good job, nice house, nice family.
Exactly. So I think we should all look at our lives now through the lens of Owen Farrell analysis.
I'm not sure all those positive outcomes are that positive.
Yeah. I've got a genuine one. Let go from my job and replaced by Chris Moyles.
Yeah.
Gave me a kick up the backside. I went and I wouldn't have been doing the BT Sports stuff.
Exactly right, mate.
That is a good one.
So that's a classic Owen Farrell. You did a classic Owen Farrell.
You farrelled it.
Yeah. I've got loads here. Getting caught by my mum's friend driving her car while she's on holiday before I pass my test. I've got falling through a shop window and getting arrested.
Where's the positive outcome element? You're just giving us
bad things that happen.
So the positive outcome you don't know where I was going in that car. That would be that would be the positive outcome there. I've got loads. I've completely farrelled that one.
On this game, Owen Farrell came on.
Yep.
And England didn't concede a point after he was on the field. And Owen Farrell's defensive stats in this game, which is a fair
7-1,
which is a fair context to compare against Lazowski and George Ford, 7-1.
7-1.
So in context,
which is about the same ratio as Lazowski and Noel, who started in the centre.
Only again, but, and this is where there's a value element, because Lazowski, one of his missed tackles was a tackle he should never have missed that led to a Japanese try,
direct try.
And you tell me a tackle that Farrell's missed where someone's walked through for a try. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, because undoubtedly it will have happened. But anyway, there's my point. And actually, interestingly, I thought out of this game, the one person that I think there's more of a question mark above their head now is Alex Lazowski.
Yeah, well, neither Lazowski or Noel had particularly good performances in that first half playing in the centre.
Lazowski to me is a 10, right? But should be playing 13. Or should I say, he's a 13 but can play 10. No, I think he's a great 13.
He is a great
13. Play him at 13.
I didn't like the centre lineup when I saw it.
No, forget it. Just no. He's a winger. Like, why is there not a clamour from Exeter fans to see the same thing? There must be a reason. I mean, they see it more than us.
Yeah.
So actually, that is a genuine question. If you are an Exeter fan and you want to see him at centre, let me know. I'd be interested to know your thoughts.
Yeah, and why?
Yeah. Cochran Singer did well.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of the ball.
No. Reasonable.
Finished his try well, was involved, nice little interplay for the care try, the first try.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at this, right, it just makes me think that England are, okay, forget the traditional tier ones, tier twos. I'm using it in a slightly different context. Tier one is New Zealand and Ireland, and then England are solidly in that next tier. I mean, I don't know how good they are in that next tier. Are they the best of the rest? Probably not.
Yeah,
but,
probably not.
You know, there's a tier of about four or five teams there who are all just as good as each other and could beat anyone on any given day.
Agreed.
But they're a million miles away from Ireland and New Zealand.
And I think what's shaping up, and hopefully after the Australia game it works the same, I think there's less question marks than there were a few weeks ago, which is a real positive for England. Not ideal, not where we want to be. I wanted to have pushed on in the way that Ireland have. But that hasn't happened, but there's a bit of momentum building.
England feel like they've stabilised a bit to me.
A little bit, yes. Agreed. Although there's still a few question marks I have. Elliot Daly, still not convinced.
He's fullback. As a 15.
Still not convinced.
No,
the only way you're going to get convinced is more game time. And the problem is, he needs lots of game time at Wasps. Yeah. And he's not really going to get it because of Willie LaRue.
Mike Brown, for all of his shortcomings, and he's getting older, he's getting slower, blah 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 blah, he has had many, many hours at fullback. He's had a whole career there.
He was England's best player in South Africa.
Yeah, on the wing,
playing on the wing, which
him and Johnny May,
they did both. They did kind of interchange as well with him playing on the wing.
So, you know, fullback, I just don't get it for Elliot Daly. Elliot Daly is a really good electric winger. He's the sort of guy you just need on the field. And if that means hiding him on the wing, so be it.
But and plus, if you wanted to, why not play him at 13?
I know. If you want to experiment with an auxiliary 13 that could go in there for a World Cup, he's got a career's body of work at 13.
Yeah.
And Jack Knoll has played plenty at fullback or in the back three. So, anyway. There's still a few question marks, but
yeah. Did you not like the selection of Ted Hill? Did you see him?
No, I didn't. Not because I don't think he's a really exciting prospect and a very very good 19-year-old player, but just I really think pulling on that jersey and wearing the rose. Did he come on? I didn't watch the end of the game.
He did come on. Yeah.
So he's made his debut. So he is an England international. He's got a number on that list of England internationals, and I just think it devalues what pulling on the rose means because he has not earned that.
No, it's hard to say.
He's an incredibly exciting player, don't get me wrong, and they've seen him in training, and I'm sure they trust him and stuff. He hasn't earned that rose in the way that I want an England player to have
earned
that rose.
Like what Wilson has after 5 years of grafting and throwing his head
into
ruts.
Yeah, he hasn't even played double figures of senior matches.
The only thing I would say on that, I largely agree with everything you said there, but the only thing I would add to it is Eddie's one of his things he is really great at is this talent idea. I keep saying it, but you know, presumably people were saying that about Matt Gittell.
Well, he's an England international before Marcus Smith is.
Yeah,
but Marcus Smith has been starting for Harlequins for the last two seasons.
He gave a cap to Matt Gittell before he'd played a senior game. Full stop.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I get it, and I don't doubt that Ted Hill's going to be great. I don't want it to be construed that I'm being negative on Ted Hill because I'm absolutely not. The guy's going to be a really fantastic player.
Did he give?
But I dislike him getting a cap less than I dislike project players, but just a bit below.
Really? did Eddie discover Genge? What I mean by that, was he the one who called him up, or was that Lancaster?
Ooh.
The baby rhino.
Because you've got Genge, who came from nowhere. He was from Bristol, then in the squad. You've got Hill, you've got Marcus Smith, who feels like he's part of the furniture now in terms of Premiership appearances, but actually, a year ago he was pretty much unknown. I'm trying to think of others now. Gary Graham!
Scotland player Gary Graham.
Oh, good on you, Gary.
Well, to be fair, he called Eddie Jones and said, I'm going to do this. And fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. And I think it's the decision he should have made originally, because he thinks of himself as Scottish. His dad played for Scotland. I understand he's from a really working class, humble background, and I totally understand the attraction of 25 bags a game. But this is what it's about. The heart would have been originally Scotland.
That, an alleged... Well, I've got a text here. Would you want me to read this text?
Yeah, go on.
So, it just says, do you know the story about Gary Graham and Eddie? ? And I've said, yeah, amazing. Then I've read it again. No, sorry, I misread that. Tell me. So Gary Graham gets to Penny Hill and is walking down the corridor.
Before you do this, is this fair to say on a podcast?
Well, I'm not going to tell you who sent it, but
it's not incriminating to anyone, is it?
Well, we'll find out. Okay. Gary Graham gets to Penny Hill and is walking down the corridor. Eddie walks past and he says, sorry, and he says hello, calls him by the wrong name. Gary corrects him and Eddie says, I didn't pick you. Now, if that is true, if that is even remotely true...
It can't be true, can it?
Surely not.
I don't
Surely
know.
Surely Eddie has well, 100% he's not... total control can, over that squad.
Can you remember when he got picked and the stories around him being picked were... Well, first of all, who is he?
Yeah.
Right? That was the first thing.
He only played half a dozen times for Newcastle from Jersey.
Yeah, he had one touch of a ball against someone in a European Cup and that was it. So there was that. And then there was the noises about England getting annoyed that other countries were poaching their academy products.
Yeah.
And then there was Ben Bellacott, who's Scottish through and through, getting called up to the England training squad.
Yeah.
So we did actually say at the time, this does sound a little bit political. And I think it might have been. And it's come back to bite them.
Well, it hasn't, because they could have picked him if they wanted him. Yeah. So fair play, Gary Graham. Go get your caps.
And get your stash. Well,
yeah. Get your stash as well. My God, yeah. Check out eBay. That'll be up there soon.
The irony of him not getting in because Skinner was playing is not lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good all round for everyone, I think.
Yes. So, but let this be a lesson, people of dual nationality or dual options when it comes to playing rugby. Think very carefully about statements you make publicly because they could bite you in the ass. Because one thing Gary Graham did say when he was playing for England, they went, so obviously you could have chosen Scotland, but you chose England. And he said, yeah, for me, anything less than playing for England is a failure. Gary Graham.
Hey, he might still think that.
He's not yet played for Scotland, so he could always go back again.
The quote he said now, this week, is, quote, I've always wanted to play for Scotland.
I tell you what, it wouldn't be amazing if he's got like Welsh ancestry.
Yeah.
And then he gets called up to Wales or Ireland.
Yeah.
Come on.
He doesn't get a Scotland cap.
Yeah, Banahan should have done the full tour for Stash before playing his first England game.
Yeah.
He's born in Jersey.
Yeah, what he could have done. So he goes Scotland squad, then the Ireland squad, Wales squad. And just right before the game, just do a Dan Levy, full body soreness.
Yeah.
Oh, full body, which, by the way,
undisclosed full body soreness.
Got one particular journalist very worked up. Did you see this?
I saw one tweet from Kitson.
Oh, he was furious.
Oh, yeah, because Ireland are now, well, this is following on from Conor Murray, yeah. Ireland are not disclosing any information about injuries
information.
To Ireland's players.
But what about the fans, Tim? What about the fans? I don't understand the argument at all. If they don't want to give their medical history, that is their... if they can't play, they can't play. And that's all you need to know.
Yeah, but all they need to say is, it's a thigh.
Generic tightness.
He pulled out in training, it hurt his thigh.
Yeah, exactly.
We're waiting for scans. But it's a bit odd going, we're not discussing anything to do with the medical situation of our players. It is a bit odd.
Well,
I do find it a bit odd because it's like ultra protective. Who's going to use that information?
I would use it.
How?
Depends what the injury is.
Okay, it's a knee injury.
Knee injury or foot injury, target the foot.
Would you, though?
Yeah, I think so.
And okay, then put yourself in the physio looking after Dan Levy.
Okay.
You're going to make sure he's back at full strength.
Yeah.
So what good is targeting the foot?
Sorry, are you asking me how I would use that information as what?
So first of all, I was asking you...
As the opposition,
and then secondly, if you're a physio, are you going to let him go out if there's any weakness?
No, of course you're not.
So the information is useless?
But you might do. You might do.
Would you?
It's my information. If I don't want it getting out, that'll be that. And I'm completely on the
player's side. Some of the speculation is it's all to do with insurance.
It might be. But then you've got to declare it on your insurances anyway.
We talked about this before.
Is it like if they're looking for... The one thing I thought of with the Conor Murray, not this Levy one, was the Alex Corbisiero. When Brian Smith, the London Irish coach, when he left London Irish to go to Northampton, said he has got a degenerative knee injury and he played a couple more seasons and packed it in. That was the only thing. So if there was something that was like long term, a chronic problem, that's when you wouldn't want it out. If it's an ankle or a wrist or whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So it made me worry a bit about the Conor Murray issue would be something of that magnitude.
That's interesting. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess if you then take the stance that you're not going to disclose any information about anyone, you take that whole degenerative thing out of there.
If I was in the mood to tell you, I'd tell you. If I wasn't, I wouldn't. And that'd be that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Your information, do with it what you want.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Just before we leave the England-Japan, I know we're bouncing about a bit. England-Japan game, I just want to say how good Michael Leitch was.
Oh, my word.
And it was, it is a bit of a travesty that, and Nick Mullins said it is now protocol that the winning team, a player from the winning team has to be man of the match.
That is actually explicit.
That's what Nick Mullins tweeted.
I know that is generally what happens because you don't want to have the Joe Launchbury
against
Wales. You just lost. There you go. Just smile with your medal.
Joe Launchbury and I think Michael Hooper did one against England, perhaps, where in the
Michael Hooper or David Pocock.
It's basically the same person, I think. To me. So I can understand where. It's almost, for tier one nations, it should be from the winning team. If tier two are playing tier one, this does sound a little bit patronising. But
it is a little bit patronising.
Michael Leitch was the best player on that pitch.
Yeah. Comfortably.
He was by far the best player on that pitch.
Yeah. Do you remember when Michael Leitch got choked up by David Pocock?
I do remember about that.
The ethical David Pocock.
Yeah, eco-warrior.
And the flip side of that is, Michael Leitch, you don't have to do... a long interview, and you can, and plus anyway, he was the losing captain.
Anyway.
I'm sure he'd front up and talk about it anyway. But it's an odd one. I don't personally agree with that protocol. If it's 50-50 and you could pick one or another, fine.
Yeah.
It makes more sense. But like you say, comfortably the best player on the pitch.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have had a problem in the Scotland South Africa game with Stuart Hogg being man of the match. Because I thought, okay, again, and I think it was a big blow when he went off. And hopefully, because it looked like an ankle injury again, which he'd just come back from. Hopefully, that's not bad at all. But I thought he was the best player on the pitch. I thought he was phenomenal.
He was. And Hoggy would have loved to have walked away with that can of Tennent's in formaldehyde, the man of the match trophy for Scotland international games.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Block of Tennent's.
It's like Damien Hirst, budget pound shop Damien Hirst.
It is incredible. It is incredible.
I'd love one of those. Having seen it.
Yeah. So this is another game which just tells me there are no longer any bad teams in international rugby, because these two were absolutely fantastic.
It's a great game, this.
Wasn't it?
It was.
I mean, if it wasn't for the game afterwards, we would be talking about this for, the first 30 minutes of the entire programme.
The Jesse Creel try, Mostert and Kitsoff, the hands of that, a couple of front five forwards, the break and hands, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was the other way around. It was like the centres doing the handling and the forwards doing the crash through it, because Jesse Creel crashed over the line.
I mean, I thought Scotland were going to get a hiding. I didn't think that Scotland could stop South Africa in any way, shape, or form.
Well, then you haven't been looking at Scotland's results at Murrayfield for the last 2 years.
Yeah. It wasn't
eight
about
out
that.
Eight out of nine,
and then only narrowly lost to New Zealand.
No, it wasn't about that defeat. For me. It was about that South Africa pack being so much more massive than anything else on earth, and them just not being able to contain the go forward. I was completely wrong.
Yeah, because we had seen Scotland against France last season, which was a bit of a chaotic game, but they could handle it.
Yeah.
And they can. They might not be quite as big the Scotland pack, but they're very well drilled, very well organised.
So Scotland remind me of Ireland before last World Cup. And what I mean by that is they are a good team, but they are still reliant on a handful of individuals. Whereas Ireland have got past that now. They're not, Conor Murray's out, doesn't matter. Probably Johnny Sexton's probably the only guy they can't replace, and they probably could.
Henshaw out, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. So they're sort of past the individual stage. Scotland need all their players playing and playing well to be good. But nevertheless, when they do have everyone playing, they're really, really good. And they'll be, the World Cup coming up, there are so many good teams that could win it, and I include Scotland in that.
So do you think they could actually win it?
Yeah, I think...
I don't think they can string together seven games for exactly the reason you just highlighted.
But...
Yeah.
So if you take out...
Is it six games? Seven yeah. games?
Yeah. So if you...
seven.
If anything happens to Ireland or New Zealand on the way to the final, right? You've got five teams there. Four teams, one of them's going to win it, and all of them are not capable of stringing together those six wins. But they will do so just by default.
But the
someone has to win it, and if it's not those two, it could be anyone from the chasing pack. So yeah, absolutely, Scotland could win it.
Scotland's problem, they would have to be phenomenally lucky with injuries. Because exactly as you have just highlighted, that it's not always 1A and 1B.
Yes, that is actually a bit of a...
And that does make it difficult.
I think Australia are probably in that group. They need everyone fit and firing. England probably not quite so much, actually.
Depends on positions for England. Yeah. England have got a few key guys who, if they're missing, cost them.
Yeah, no Vunipolas and they're in trouble.
No Vunipolas and they beat South Africa and lost to New Zealand by one point.
I still think it's South Africa that are going to be the biggest challenges to those top two.
What about on debut? Faf's been getting all the headlines, and then Embro's Papier. What a live wire he is.
He's all right.
Yeah, he was
all
exciting.
He held the fort well.
Just because you're a man behind the scenes at Sale, JB.
Not particularly.
Well, you work.
But go on, try me.
Out in front, not behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, you work there.
I don't work there. Ask away.
Why wasn't Faf playing for South Africa?
I couldn't possibly suggest why.
It doesn't normally stop you.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think they've just got a very good relationship with Sale there, which is probably why they've got another South African international rocking up to play for them for 3 months now, which is quite exciting. And the word on the street is there's going to be more. And names that you will have heard of who probably played this weekend too. So watch this space.
Props.
Maybe ginger ones. Who knows?
Yeah.
That'll be a good sign-in.
But I think the problem is they are after a lot of these South African lads. Have got a good relationship there, but everyone's after these South African lads. And the money that will be thrown at those lads is going to be enormous.
Can I talk about one moment in this Scotland v South Africa game?
Yes, please.
The yellow card for Willy Larue, right.
So I did not like this.
No, and I've said this before, so I'm not going to labour the point. But I think I can now verbalise what my issue is. So this is one of those situations where it's adjudged to have been a deliberate knock-on, denying an attacking opportunity and therefore an automatic yellow card. It was Willy Larue getting a yellow card for that was consistent with the other yellow cards which have been given out all season. I think they're all rubbish and none of them like that should be given a yellow card. And here's the way that I've crystallised it in my mind. So, yes, he denied a clear break.
He did?
With his knock-on, which was adjudged to have been deliberate. However, had he not rushed up to try to intercept the ball, there would not have been a shot at a line break. Therefore, what you're actually doing is incentivising safe defence and collisions, and you're disincentivising evasion and potential tries, one way or the other. Because Willy Larue catches it, he scores. Scotland catch it, they could go and score. But actually, the coaching point, as Phil quite often talks about in these sort of situations, the coaching point is going to be, don't even try interceptions. Stand back, play it safe. Be passive and just make the tackle. So what you actually incentivise in world rugby with this particular interpretation of the law, because deliberate knock-ons have always been penalties or yellow cards, what you're doing with this 50-50 could actually catch it and knock it on. You're incentivising extra tackles, extra rucks, less tries.
I do love the idea. I mean, yes, you can tell when a player can and cannot or does and does not have a chance of catching the ball. On the other hand, I'd like to think that the player trying to catch the ball, particularly in international, is in a handful of the most qualified people on earth who know when a ball is catchable.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd like to be able to just leave it to their judgment.
Yeah, and I do. I think I've made this point before. I do have a bit of an issue with the term deliberate, because deliberate signals you intended to knock it on, Whereas the way it is adjudicated is, were they in a, and in fact in line with the way it's written in the laws, is were they in a reasonable position or did they have a reasonable chance of catching that ball? But exactly as you say, Willy the Roo, there is no way he would have gone for that with one hand if he thought he couldn't have caught it with one hand.
He is one of the, probably the top five people in the world most qualified to judge if a ball is catchable.
Yes. And in that position, he... There is no incentive at all for him not to try and catch it.
Yeah.
Because if he catches it, it's 7 points.
Exactly.
So it just, that one, it just seems so odd. There's some which have been more marginal than that. That just seemed like,
to be fair, I
was seeing something completely different to all of
us. I am all for yellow cards for deliberate knock-ons. To try scoring opportunities.
Yeah, if it is cynical.
And like a slap down.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a slap down, if it's cynical, definitely. Mm. But that, and all the commentators who generally former players, the pundits were all saying, no, he's trying to get that. He's trying to take it. So yeah. I just think this was Poit's
interpretation. Shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. You moan for letter of the law for a couple of years and this is what you get.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was letter of the law, though.
Well, all right. You crave consistency. That means when it happens once, it has to happen every time. So... anyway, it's all that particular interpretation of that particular law is bollocks.
I do agree. That particular interpretation was just wrong.
Yep. So to sum up, Scotland good, South Africa good. Well done, guys.
Great work.
Well done.
So the other games that I watched the full game of, we watched the full game of, France-Argentina.
Loved it. I love France. I think France is my favourite team in the world now. France and South Africa, it's a toss-up between those two.
So watching this, JB said it when we were watching this, straight immediately after. So we recorded this game, we watched the big one, Ireland, New Zealand. And
what was France, Argentina on? Because last week you couldn't watch France, South Africa.
Premier Sports.
Premier Sports.
Both, both times, which JB has because of his beloved Benetton.
Of course.
So JB said, this is like watching a very, very good public school match.
Yeah.
In comparison to the standard, the ferocity of Ireland, New Zealand. And I think you were right. You're watching the set piece, watching the defensive line structure was...
It was all perfectly competent.
It was acceptable.
Yeah.
It was nothing. Like watching that dog-legged France-Argentina defensive line meander its way up the pitch when one of the teams was attacking, compared to the militant discipline of that Ireland defensive line, it was...
But what were you expecting with, France-Argentina, not renowned for their stoic defensive duties.
I know, but it really did highlight the difference.
Yeah,
but
more than anything else.
It led to a highly entertaining game.
It was a great game.
And a couple of standout performances, Teddy Thomas and Gail Ficou. Gail Ficou,
some of the passes were incredible in this game.
Oh, yeah.
So the Ficou pass.
For Thomas's, was that his second try?
Yeah. I love Teddy Thomas. He's just so... I was going to say good, but maybe that's not quite it. He just does things which other people can't.
And you
can't explain how he does it either.
Yeah. Some of his running is incredible.
Ouje was back, and I love Ouje.
Ouje.
He's just
slick.
The Ouje break for the first Thomas try?
He's slick, literally and metaphorically.
Yes. Whatever oozes out of his skin can probably make engines run 40% more efficiently. he is. I love him because he's just like he's like a comic book bad guy. Like, everybody hates him. He's the French
except
villain.
The women.
Yeah, except the women. He's literally like the French villain that Hollywood would write. I just can't get enough of this. I just love the French. I really do. In fact, next Six Nations, they're probably going to be the team that I actually support.
Well, you're going to be because it's on the board.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've said that they're going to win the Six Nations. I'm not convinced on that at all now. At all. I think they're probably 4 or 5. But, you know.
Wow.
They're going to be better than England. And
I didn't watch Wales-Tonga.
No, neither did I. Was playing.
So the first half an hour before the England game, and it was all Wales. Not helped by the... Tonga were not helped by the referee. He gave a penalty try, which didn't really need to be a penalty try, and the yellow card at the same time, which put them down to 10 men. And Wales just men. Sorry, 10 men, 14 men. Wales just controlled
You've
it.
You've been to City again this week?
Not this week.
On an international weekend anyway, so you had to have a weekend off the football.
Yeah.
Yes.
Has anyone read any of the rugby press today? In relation to transfers, anyone know any of any transfers?
Not from today.
Have you got any that you're aware of?
What, international players?
Yes.
After the autumn internationals come in places?
An English guy moving. Anyway, it doesn't matter because we'll tell you about that in the domestic podcast.
Ooh, which is going to be in a day's time.
Exactly.
We're getting back together tomorrow. The band are getting back together for the domestic pod.
Like, just like the Spice Girls.
Except, who are you then, Jay?
I don't know. That's a good question. Baby, that's not really it. It's probably baby.
Belligerent Spice.
Belligerent Spice. Old Spice?
Phil would be...
Manchester Homeless Spice. I don't know.
I saw some... I assume that's what they were doing. I walked near Piccadilly Station and saw some people.
So interesting.
Keeling over backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Relax, yoga it might have been.
So it was either Spice or yoga, one of the two.
So interesting little fact for you. I was getting the tram up to Oldham a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago now. And every morning there would be people getting on the tram who probably weren't going to work that morning. A few weeks ago, there was a tower block in Oldham, which is literally about 500 metres away from where I work, which was cordoned off by the police, and they found the North West's biggest spice lab there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's proper Breaking Bad stuff.
Breaking Bad, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why people were going on the tram towards Oldham.
Before we go...
Grim up north.
Before we go, just one little word on Steve Brown leaving the RFU as chief exec.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I know nothing about it.
He's only been in charge for 14 months. He apparently made his own decision to leave. Sorry.
Sure he did.
Did Brown make... Oh, no, sorry, that's a question, not a statement. Sorry.
So from what I read...
It was described by Francis Barron this week. The finances were described as, quote, a shambles by the former chief exec. And they had to... And the RFU had to get rid of 64 members of staff as emergency cost cutting.
That's astonishing, isn't it?
Brown was the man who was the public figure of these financial problems and had already admitted that the union would need to make £5 million worth of cuts per year for 4 years to reset their balance sheet. So the RFU have said it was totally Steve's decision.
Hang on a minute. So I'm not...
He's only been there 14 months, though. How much damage can you do in 14 months?
This is exactly what I was going to ask Phil, because I'm not au fait with big commercial organisations, but you are. Like, how much damage can you do? I mean, presumably quite a lot.
It depends how much direct control he has, and also how much is controlled by other people, or how much that should be under his control... And he's actually not under his control, if that makes sense.
Well, the East Stand had nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't build an East Stand in 18 months from conception to actually throwing the thing up.
No, 2012. I know. So the RFU, Barron claims the RFU's lost nearly £50 million since 2012 and that the East Stand was £27 million over budget.
Does he mean they spent £50 million rather than just carelessly left it around?
Lost £50 million, yeah. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Anyway, bit of a mess and a bit of a vacuum in leadership.
Well, I'm sure the Telegraph will clear that up for us in short order because they are the people in the know about the RFU.
Well, watch this space.
Indeed.
Anyway, if anything happens between now and tomorrow that we happen to read between now and tomorrow, then...
Like some transfer rumours, eh?
We'll let you know, maybe some transfer rumours. See you on the domestic pod.
Just one thing worth mentioning. Well, two things worth mentioning.
Canada.
Yes, the repechage.
Oh, yeah, it's over. It is over.
It's pretty much, for all intents and purposes, over.
It's not over unless Hong Kong beat Canada by more than 60 points. About 60 points. 57 points.
All right. And what about Germany?
And Germany would have to get a bonus point win.
Germany are out of it.
Oh, they're out of it.
Yeah, because they've not picked up any bonus points so far.
Oh, poor Germany.
Canada's on 10 points.
So us going to the final weekend of the repechage to see the final team crowned at the Rugby World Cup is just more of a procession and coronation of Canada.
Probably. So Hong Kong do play Canada. If Hong Kong get a big bonus point win against Canada, they could theoretically.
Which game is first?
The Kenya-Germany game is first at 6 o'clock. And Hong Kong, Canada is.
Should we go see Mike Ford?
Definitely.
And Germany go watch their game. Congratulate Canada, and then get into town.
While yeah. they're warming up, we can congratulate them.
Yeah, I think that's probably wise.
There's a pretty nice marina in Marseille.
Yeah, and I have booked a table too. So,
so you preempted Canada.
I would be.
That's. I mean, that's.
I would be astonished.
Your board, right? Yeah. Your board has had some. Some things you've put your money where your mouth is with the board. Some of those predictions haven't come off. Some of them haven't. Booking a table for Marseille weeks before the repechage, preempting the fact that Canada will already be there. I mean, that's the most impressive thing you've done.
It is. I would be frankly astonished if we go to eyes with these games. But,
we're definitely going to one of the games.
Yeah,
we'll see the start.
How far out? Where is the Marseille rugby ground in relation to the town?
I don't think it's too far
out. It's on the tram route.
Oh, that's right then.
I've already done my maps.
And then we will be doing podcasting and stuff next weekend.
Now,
from the Stadio de Flaminio.
Yeah, in Rome.
So that's a really good point. Do we do our podcast? This is sort of an internal chat, but it doesn't matter.
After we've been on the beers with Mike Ford, yes.
No, well, no, we can't. So, no, we'll have to do it on Sunday. So what we'll do on Sunday, well, because we're going to be in Rome, and the Rome match kicks off at 1.
It does.
Meaning that we've got to then somehow watch the rest of the internationals in Rome somewhere. Oh, no. But that also means that...
We'll go to some of Rome's fine Irish bars.
Yeah, that also means that we're not necessarily going to be able to podcast that evening. Like, so we'll have to do it all on Sunday.
Unlikely, because the last game will only finish at, like, 10 o'clock.
That'll be France, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, I love France.
What
so
games
much.
Are there this weekend? Let's do that now.
Yeah, let's do
okay.
that.
Where are we? Here we go. Fixtures for next week.
So I think that whole conversation was a general apologies in advance for the quality of podcasting you're likely to get next weekend. Although, hopefully, it will be full, like last season's. It will be full of some of the world's best players. Well, the great and the good.
And the world's best player.
Literally.
Johnny Sexton
literally.
On the pod.
Yes. If Johnny Sexton doesn't get it, it's a travesty.
Well, no, because Faf anyway, will have it. He's got to get off Faf first.
Yeah, true.
Love Faf.
But,
love
but you, can pull, you can just pull your strings and get Faf on the pod anyway, right?
See what I can do.
Just one other thing from the games. The Italy-Australia game wasn't an amazing game. There is a shocking refereeing decision to disallow Tito Tibaldi's
try.
Yeah,
I saw that. How did he call that offside?
He was comfortably onside. He was yards onside. It was great timing from Tibaldi.
The interception, yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, one thing to note, Bellini, the Italian winger, is rapid. He scored one try and hunted down Israel Flau, who's not the fastest in open field, but Flau had 10 yards on him, and he comfortably caught up with him. So.
More Italian players that are also the names of canapes.
Canapes and drinks.
And drinks. That's how it should be.
A tough warm-up for Australia ahead of England. This
that is actually quite an important game. I mean, like
Australia-England is probably the only important game, isn't it? The weekend?
So we'll go through them. So Romania hosts Uruguay in Bucharest.
That is big for them.
Georgia hosts Tonga. And it should be said,
be physical.
Georgia beat Samoa in Tbilisi this weekend.
Oh, excellent.
Crikey, there were some big games.
So, Georgia hosting Tonga. Tonga, who got absolutely hammered by Wales. So, I imagine Georgia will win that. Italy host New Zealand, which we will be at. Looking forward to that one. Then, Japan play Russia, which, given that Russia lost to the Dragons, I think that's going to be an absolute beatdown. Scotland host Argentina. Now this is actually this is very important for both teams to have more successful autumn internationals. Both teams really need a win here because Argentina have been disappointing. So I think Scotland will win this. Hopefully Hoggy will be playing. We've not touched on the Hog move yet, have we?
We'll do it for the Premiership.
Okay. Then Spain hosts Samoa in Madrid, our favourite stadium in the world.
Yep.
Yeah.
Portugal hosts Namibia.
Oh, nice.
Lovely.
France play Fiji, which I imagine will be fairly one-way traffic. Ireland play United States, which will be some one-way traffic. And then the two other big games of the weekend. So Wales play South Africa.
Huge. Huge.
Which Wales...
This is a big one.
This is a big test for Wales. And England play Australia. So how do we see those two go in?
Wales will win at home.
I think Wales and Australia win. Wales and England win.
I agree with that.
I mean, if England can't beat Australia...
Now, who were the last team to beat Ireland?
Don't know. Australia?
Australia, in the summer tour.
Oh, yeah.
So, if Ireland beat the number one team in the world, so Hansen said that makes Ireland the number one team in the world.
And Schmidt said, do me a favour. We've only won one game. Schmidt said they're coming off the end of a long season and they've been the world number one for the last couple of years. So they're all trying to jockey. We're not favourites.
I would 100% run with Iron with number one if I was number one.
You would run with number one if you were number six.
Correct. So, take it.
Australia are the team to beat by the Worcester Warriors' logic of beating the team that's beaten some of the best teams in the top 14.
Yeah.
England have got to beat the world's number one team this weekend.
Exactly.
There you go. It's all on this for Eddie. And yeah. I think he'll go back to the team that he played against New Zealand.
If Eddie loses this one, will you start to think it is probably time for Eddie to move on? Or no, he's going to... I've changed my mind. I do think he's going to take him to the World Cup, but I do also think that he's been a bad appointment if he loses this.
So I don't overall think he's a bad appointment. I think there's things that I would have liked to see be done differently. I still like the appointment, and whether he wins or loses this, I still want to see him go into the World Cup.
One thing that fills me with a little bit of hope is that the way Mauro Itoje is playing, and I think he's almost a barometer of what Eddie Jones is doing, because there's been times when you've looked at him playing for England and gone, that's not Mauro. He's tired. He's busy.
Mm.
And I wonder if maybe Eddie isn't flogging. It's interesting, and we'll talk about this in the Premiership podcast, but Pat Lam has tweaked the way Bristol are playing. Eddie might have tweaked the way he's not flogging his players.
Well, I actually would have preferred to see Itoje not play that game.
Well, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's four starts for him.
Yeah.
He did play very well. He man of the match. Maybe Leach should have got it. But there was some analysis I saw of the Leach try where Itoje just doesn't recognise. He just doesn't track across.
Mm.
It looks incredibly lazy. And I don't think it's laziness. I just think he didn't realise until it was too late that Leach has breached the defence. And so he's just jogging across. And if he'd have seen it early, he would have got there and could have potentially stopped it. But other than that one moment, he had a very good game.
I think England will win. Australia are probably the... Well,
the poor.
So we thought South Africa were in chaos a year ago, and look at them now. And Australia are...
Well, Australia were in chaos this time 4 years ago. You know, if they hadn't changed their coach, they were in the process of changing their coach from whoever it was to Michael Chaka. So, it's going to be close. And really, for this stage of World Cup cycles, it shouldn't be if England was serious.
So we all say in England
by one score.
Yeah, I think England will win. Just
yeah,
but Australia have got the firepower to cause them some problems.
They really do.
That was just one other thing from the. So that disallowed try for Tito Tsoboldi, and then the Tongan Thor try, there were two,
Obstructions,
yeah. Thank you, Tim. Two obstructions in the run-up to that try, yeah, which prevented Italy from tackling him. So, yeah, Italy a little bit hard done by on that scoreline.
Right, there we go.
There we go. Done.
You know where to find us. Let the boys play.
Indeed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.